When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to some brand new hijinks with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, we have a dear friend and very talented performer, Mary Holland, as our guest. And she and I will talk about our experience working on Happiest Season together. Spoilers, she did a lot more work than I did. We'll also talk about what it's like to be an introverted person in an extroverted career. All today on Hijinks. So get ready to hunker down and sink your teeth into some new hijinks.
Forever Dog.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by actress, comedian, and writer, Mary Holland. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Jinx.
Mary, I'd like to begin our conversation today with a story, a memory.
Oh, okay. I love it.
And then we'll launch from there.
Okay, but great.
It's one of those embarrassing stories that actually has a very lovely twist to it. So we first met at mutual friend Clea Duvall's wedding party.
Yes.
Celebrating the marriage to her wife, Mia. That's where we first met. And then basically the next time I saw you was on the set of Happiest Season.
I think that's right.
And the way my schedule worked out, I had the day off after my shoot day. And my shoot day was the final shoot day of the whole movie.
That was it.
The wrap day. Yeah.
That was the end of it.
So I realized if I wanted to, I could stay for the wrap party. And so I moved my flight, stayed an extra day, and went to the wrap party. And it was only at the moment that I arrived at the wrap party that I realized, oh my God, I've only worked on this film for one day. And now I'm at a wrap party, just wall to wall people I don't actually know. I immediately felt out of place.
Oh,
I immediately felt like I crashed a rap party. And I had only recently quit drinking. So I was just kind of drinking Sprite and feeling super awkward. And
that's a very vulnerable position to be in.
Yeah. But here's the charming part of the story. At one moment, I was just kind of sitting, talking to no one, feeling like I was glowing red. And then you kind of parted the sea and came to me and struck up a conversation with me, being one of the only people I knew there.
Oh, gosh.
And you were so kind and made sure I felt like chill to be hanging out with everyone. And we caught up and it was just a really lovely moment. It made the whole awkward experience worth it. That and the fact that then shortly after that, I went out to wait for my Uber. And I let Kristen Stewart take a hit off my vape pen.
It was a top-notch night, it sounds like, to me.
That's my little story.
I love that.
Mary Holland, you are amazing. Tell us how, like, let's just start off. You're in every TV show. You wrote... And co-starred in the movie Happiest Season. You wrote it with Clea Duvall. Are you co-creator, co-writer, co-anything else?
co um, co-friend. I mean, oh my gosh. Yeah, that sounds right. I feel like you nailed it. Yeah, the experience of Happiest Season was from like the first part of when Clea and I first met, and she told me this idea that she's had for so long, this rom-com, Christmas rom-com that she wanted to make. And actually, I saw her last night, and we were having dinner close to the coffee house that we first like met at. And we she really took a chance on me, because we didn't know each other at all. We had just seen each other in passing at some table reads. And you know, Clea is a very funny, very lovely person. And right away I was drawn to her, and I, you know, thank God she felt similarly, because I would have just been chasing her down. But yeah, it was such a wonderful experience, and to get to see it come to fruition, and for you and Ben Delacreme to be there. And on that night, it was just such a special way to like end that chapter, the shooting of the movie. It was so beautiful. And you guys were so funny.
Bar. In where were we? Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
In an actual drag bar, but it was shut down, and we were just pretending it was a drag bar that day.
The layers to it. Oh my gosh.
Very meta.
Very meta.
And I'm not joking. I had a habit for a while of texting you out of the blue every new time I saw you on a TV show, because you've done cameos in countless TV shows. I actually have a list here. I should refer to my notes. Let's see. Adding to your acting resume, you have been in Silicon Valley, Parks and Rec, Veep, The Mindy Project, The Good Place, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, and so many more. I guess it wasn't that long a list that I had prepared here. And so many more. It's all encompassing.
So many.
But yeah, I recently, well, not recently. Do you love how time has just become completely irrelevant?
It means nothing. Look, Matthew McConaughey was right. It's a flat circle. And we're all just sitting on it.
I binged Veep at some point.
Oh,
I had
great.
Already seen it, but I re-binged it at some point. And what's funny is half the times I see you on my TV screen, it's in something I have already watched, but now I'm rewatching it post meeting you.
And now
I can recognize you at the drop of a hat. It's like, where's Waldo? I've gotten really good at spotting Mary Holland in TV shows. Your character in Veep is very aggressive. She is a dom alpha female.
Yeah.
What was the experience of Veep like? Because if anyone's seen it, it seems like a very intense show to be a part of, but it also seems like what a fucking blast to just get to swear all day for work.
That's exactly what it is. It is the experience of stepping into that world with that group of people. I had been friends with Tim Simons and Sam Richardson prior, so that it was very nice to like be coming into a group of people that I'm like, oh yeah, I know these people. And especially with Tim, like having all my scenes with him, it was very comfortable playing with him. But that I was blown away by every level of talent on that show, like the writers, the actors, the crew, everybody was incredible. And there was such a fastidious dedication to getting, like, making every single moment the funniest possible moment it could be. I was really inspired by that and so struck by it. Like, I remember there was a scene we were shooting that, for whatever reason, the jokes weren't landing in the way that I think they wanted them to. And we paused. We like stopped shooting. The writers huddled together, and like it was just so incredible to see everybody so dedicated to, like, nobody's phoning it in on that show. And I think you could tell, because the quality is superb. Like that was the greatest, one of the greatest television shows I feel like ever made, comedy or drama. It's just outstanding.
Absolutely, because there's no wasted time.
Yeah.
The scenes are actually super short. Like, I feel like we're cutting from scene to scene very quickly throughout that show.
Yeah.
But there's no wasted air. There's no wasted time. Every line has a punch to it. Every conversation progresses the plot in some unforeseen, remarkable way.
And surprising, like the jokes, and you would think like after 7 years of like writing these characters, that you'd be like, oh, how many more creative insults can they come up with? And the answer is they can do this forever. Like another part of that process that I love so much. It is such a well-oiled machine. They had like three cameras set up. It was like the pacing that you experience watching the show is very similar to the pacing of shooting it. But the showrunner, Dave Mandel, would always built into the shooting schedule with the directors and everything was always a fun run. So it would always be like we would shoot the scripted scene. We'd shoot that a couple times, get that done. Mm-hmm. And then when it's ready to move on, they would let us do a fun run. And we would just get to fully lose our minds and play and improvise. And that's just such a treat as an actor to get to do, because you're living in this point of view. And to get to explore it with the script is so great. And then without the script, it gets you into that character even more, like, especially with someone like Shawnee and how the disdain she had for Jonah. It was just really fun to play in that space.
I can imagine. I mean, I love improv, but I've always wanted more chances to improv. Like, not just in full costume, not with just another good improver, but, like, in the set and in the, like, fully fictional world of those characters. Because, you know, improving in your neutral blacks with, like, two acting blocks and a stool only gets your rocks off so much.
Only so much. Yes, I know. To be in costume as your character and you've got, like, you're in this beautifully built set, like, you're fully in a world. And then, to play in that is, it's the best.
Yeah.
For sure.
A bit like a Ren Faire, huh?
And say no more. Say no more. I've told this story so many times on so many podcasts, but my very first job was I because I love an atmosphere. I love an atmosphere. And particularly, I love the atmosphere at medieval times and the dinner and tournament. Yeah. And I worked at, I was a photography wench. That was my first job. I worked in the photo department at at Medieval Times. And I made $6 an hour plus commission, but I never made commission because I was terrible at selling the pictures we would take of the customers. But I just loved being in an outfit. And being in a world and like hearing this music and watching these knights joust. And I just love it so much. Just full immersion, you know, full immersion.
I'm quite jealous. I mean, I'm trying to think of, I mean, I have a far less of a breadth of experiences as you, but I'm trying to think if I've ever gotten to like improv in a full like set before.
And well, what about your holiday special? I mean,
if you think anything is improvised when you're working with Ben De La Creme. I actually was going to, just kind of. It was very funny and serendipitous that you and Clea created a holiday movie. And because of the pandemic, it wasn't our plan, mine and Dayla's, to create a holiday movie.
Oh, really?
Movie. We had been in talks with Clea about our roles in the movie, since the holiday before, since the winter before. And then, we were going to just be doing our normal Christmas tour, but I don't know if you know, but a pandemic broke out and kind of put the kibosh on that. So,
yeah.
So we ended up making the movie at the last minute. And, you know, both things kind of came out in tandem. And it really allowed Dayla and I to claim the winter holiday season as our own.
And it is. And it is yours, quite frankly. Your special is so funny and so beautiful. It's just like it is eye candy and brain candy and heart candy. I love it so much.
We're going to put that quote on the Blu-ray, the limited Blu-ray edition.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Ys. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Ys. Movies, Baby!
I've been talking about this a lot recently, but I think there is some special magic when the creators are, when it's like the writers, the creators, the directors, the producers, they all keep it within the family. Clea directed Happiest Season as well as co-writing it with you. You played my favorite character in the whole film, a very lovable and endearing, albeit neurotic sister.
That's right. Yeah.
And I just remember your monologue towards the end. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone since we're getting close to wintertime again.
It is almost the season.
But you have a monologue at the end where you kind of just like call everyone out for treating you crazy the whole film.
And right.
It really struck a chord with me as the one who gets labeled as crazy quite often, but
same. I'm that means a lot that it did strike a chord with you. And you know, that moment for Jane is when we were shooting that. I mean, boy, like the moment we started shooting it, the movie in general, I was like counting down the days to when that scene would be happening. Cause I was like, I really gotta get there, you know? And, and it, that moment, I don't think I realized how much that was tied to a lot of my personal trauma because my personal issues and feelings. We wrote Jane is very much like so many qualities of her are true of me. And when we first started shooting that scene and I was delivering that monologue, I got so emotional in it that it wasn't good acting. You know what I mean? Like it was like
theatrical masturbation.
Exactly. Clea came up to me. She was such an incredible director and so supportive. Mm-hmm. And she was like, "You okay?" I was like, I think I'm working through something that I didn't know I was going to be working through in this moment with this speech. But I, you know, that is what's so beautiful about Jane is that a lot of people did feel, you know, seen in that experience mm-hmm. of being sort of the oddball in your family or somebody that your family doesn't understand or like sort of yeah. dismisses. And a lot of people have that experience. So it was cool to get to give that character a moment where she does take up space.
And I thought it was beautiful in the film because, you know, the film is a queer-led rom-com mm-hmm. and an honest-to-God rom-com and with queer characters at the center of it. Queer-centered, that's the word I was looking for earlier. Queer-led, queer-centered, queer-centric. but it was nice to see this parallel. There's the parallel between the two other sisters mm-hmm. who aren't queer but have their own things, like their own ways into understanding the queer sister
who's, yeah.
And again, I can't spoil it for people, but it's always nice when you get to see parallels because I think it invites a lot more people in.
I love
to understand how it might feel. And, you know, you can't synthesize it, but you can find the parallels in your life and someone else's life and find more compassion and empathy when you realize that we all, you know, trauma is relative.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and self-acceptance is a universal journey. Like that is, it takes different forms for different people. But yeah, I really love that there's a, it opens the door for a greater understanding of someone's experience.
And I have to remark on the premiere party that took place.
Wasn't that? Yes.
That was a magical night.
Oh.
It took place on the roof of a parking garage.
At the Grove. I never in a million years did I think. And when we pulled up there, sorry, my cat's running in front of the computer. When we pulled up there, I was like, the rooftop of the Grove, I have arrived. I have made it. I never thought I would be at a movie premiere on this. It was so cool. It was a drive-in. Really fun.
It was a really fun night. And it was also, we're in this parking lot for a drive-in movie, which was just like cool in itself. And then to also have the red carpet moment. And then also to just like watch people from 20 feet away take off their mask for a second and then realize it's some celebrity. There was a moment where a masked person got out of a car behind us.
Uh-huh.
Teeny tiny little person, giant mop of red hair piled on top
of
her head.
Oh, I think I know who you're
talking about. I take a chance and I go, is that Natasha Lyonne? Takes off her mask and she goes, hey, Jinx. Oh, I thought you were going to be here. Hi. Hello.
God, what a force. I feel like I can sense her presence.
You
don't even have to see her and you can feel her in a room.
Waves of energy.
It's true. No mask can hide that. No mask.
And you were wearing my favorite dress of the evening,
That's really nice.
It was like a floor-length white gown with some Norwegian midsummer vibes to it.
Yes, totally. Yes, it had some blue detailing. That means so much. I loved that dress. Oh, boy, did I love it. And boy, did I couldn't really sit down in it. I had to, it was a bit, you know, bit tight when I sat. But yeah, loved it. That was such a fun carpet. And there was a Christmas tree and presents. And you were dressed as a present. You were just a gift to us all.
Yeah, Dayla and I.
Or your mask was a bow, right?
No, that was Dayla's.
That was Dayla's.
I'll take the credit. No, Dayla and I was wearing I was actually wearing an outfit that was a reproduction of what Adele wore on Saturday Night Live when she hosted.
Oh, wow.
The secret to my fashion is almost everything I wear is a reproduction of something I saw either like one of my idols wearing, or something from a movie, or something from a video game. Almost nothing I wear is original.
But I would say that is original. You take the nugget, the seed, and then you make it your own. You do your Jinx spin on it.
I did choose to have the top made in red instead of black. So, yeah, basically, I'm a fashion icon. So,
I would say so. I would say so.
But yeah, I think Happiest Season was such a lovely project to get to work on, and just watching it be, you know, oh my gosh, what's that tired saying everyone says? It was a product of love. It was a passion project. No, yes. That's not the one.
It was made with love as product of love. All those things are true.
A labor of love. That's it.
Okay. When in doubt, alliterate. Yeah, so, it really was.
A quick search of your IMDb tells me that your first acting role, you were 1 year old. Is that true?
That's not true. I don't know how that got on there. I don't know who that is. But someone else has asked me about that too.
And I'm gonna double check this.
I want to say I think that's a different Mary Holland. Because I have no memory of it.
You were 1 year old on the UK comedy show The Little and Large Show?
No.
I'm glad you gave it plenty of thought.
I mean, I had to go back through my extensive, you know, mental memory bank, but absolutely not. That was not me.
Okay, let's see if this is true.
Okay, great.
You received your Bachelor of Fine Arts from Northern Illinois University.
That is true.
That is true. So you are a college trained actor. So that means at some point, I'm guessing your BFA is in acting.
Yes.
Okay. At some point, you had to decide, this is what I want to do with my life. Enough that you went to school for it. When in life did you feel like you wanted to be an actor by trade?
I don't remember not feeling that way. Mm-hmm. I was a very performative child. Any chance I could get to steal focus, I would do it.
Yeah.
I disrupted classrooms. I did whatever it took to get eyes on me. And then eventually, and that sort of evolved to getting laughs. Like I did whatever I could, and knew I wanted to be an actor, but so early on. And then I grew up in a very small town in Virginia, and it wasn't clear to me how one goes about pursuing that career. But there was a girl from my hometown who years before, or she was a bit older than me, and she went to Juilliard. And I was like, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. You got to go to Juilliard. And so I asked her, like, how did you prepare? Like, what was this path for you? And she told me about this school in Michigan that's like a fine arts boarding school, high school. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I did my senior year here, and then I auditioned for Juilliard, and then that's how it happened. And I was like, I got to go to that school. That's the only way I'm going to get to do this. So I auditioned for that school. I didn't get in, and I was crushed because I really now, of course, I have a greater understanding that.
No, now you go back to that school and stand outside there with a printout of your IMDb, and you go,
"That's
fuck you, fuckers."
Well, they did. So I didn't get in, and I was devastated because I thought, I was like, "That's the only way I know how to do this. There's no other path." And anybody who has pursued this career path, or I feel like any artistic career path, you know that there's absolutely 1 million billion different roads to get to whatever goal that you have. Like, there's no one path. And if one thing doesn't work out, it doesn't mean the end of anything. But at the time, I really thought that. And then I got in off the wait list. So I did end up going to that school. I went there for my last 2 years of high
school.
But
only after you went through the emotional devastation of...
Okay, and I remember only after that. And I remember that night that I found out I didn't get in, I cried and cried, and I watched First Wives Club.
That's good. Did you feel empowered afterward?
I did. I did. It's a great movie.
I will say I also have a BFA.
Oh, you do?
Theater.
Yes. Oh, in theater.
Emphasis in musical performance.
Oh, wow.
I went to Cornish College, and it was really, I mean, I can relate to so much stuff you said, just like I always knew I wanted to be an actor. I think it's kind of, in reflection, I think it's the best benefit I've had in life is knowing what I wanted to do basically my whole life. Because I think my one of my brothers is always complaining, like, you don't know how hard it was not knowing what I wanted to do until recently.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
But I like was I almost didn't pursue acting because I almost talked myself out of it just because I was like, this is going to be hard. You know, this is going to be harder to do. But then at the last minute, someone, a friend of mine in high school, had already paid for his application and then decided he didn't want to go to Cornish. So just let me have a slot. So I filled out my application and just went up and auditioned.
And where is Cornish?
It's in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
And I really liked this because I was really scared. When you grow up in Portland, you don't really realize what a bubble you're in until you start leaving Portland. And then you're like, oh, no, I'm being called back to the motherland. <You know? laughs> It's a lot like Rumspringa. 90% of Portlanders wind up back here.
Interesting. I mean, it's a great place. I totally understand why you ended up back there.
Yeah. I always knew I would someday, but...
Yeah.
I would say the two best things that theater school taught me was, I think I went in to theater school with the goal of becoming a famous actor, and I left theater school with the goal of being an effective actor.
Oh,
where
jinx,
fame stopped being the
yes.
motivating factor.
That's huge. That's huge. I love talking about theater school and what we've gleaned from it, and especially as you like become a professional performer, professional actor, the lessons you learn in that, because theater school is also such a bubble, like it's such a contained and has its own sort of, did you all do like production, like a spring musical every year?
Yeah, you didn't start doing the big productions until sophomore and senior year.
Right.
Junior and senior year. Sophomore year, you have to work the production side of the big productions. So I was a stage manager my sophomore year.
Did you enjoy that?
I did, yeah. No, I mean, I definitely came out of it for a greater appreciation of what, but also I came out of it knowing what, having done the job, knowing like which stage managers in life were just kind of, some stage managers are just as addicted to drama as the actors are.
Yes. And also because as a stage manager, you're responsible for so many aspects of a production coming together and happening. Mm-hmm. Like you really have to enjoy being in that sort of position of control and authority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think I've worked with some stage managers that had, you know, they had prepared their own monologues that morning. Another thing I really relate to about your story is finding ways to steal focus and have all eyes on you, which I literally, before before hopping on this Zoom call, my housemate was saying, I'm really confused by something lately. Nowadays, you're so introverted and you're such a hermit, but when we knew each other as teenagers, you were like the most outgoing person in my life. Mm. And I'm like, well, that was a persona I played so that I could handle being around people. And now, because of the quarantine, I feel like I've really receded back into my introverted way of being.
Oh, I so relate to that, Jinx. Yeah, very much so.
Would you say you have like a public persona and a private persona?
I would, yes. And I think especially when I was younger, oh my gosh, I was outputting energy constantly. And I think probably to an annoying degree to my friends and the people around me, because it wasn't a grounded energy. It was like this person is desperate to make friends, be funny, feel like they belong. I feel like my insecurities were so bald, so like out there in those moments. But I was like being goofy, and I would like fake fall all the time, and I would do all this stuff to like constantly. And I would do a bit where I'd pretend to sneeze and then and like fall backwards or something. It's so ridiculous. But my close friends at that time in my life, like, were tolerant of me when I was around a bunch of people and would sort of turn up. And then, but I feel like this, as I grew up, this part of me started to get more and more comfortable, where it was like, oh, I can also be, it's okay to be quiet. And that's what I definitely need alone time to sort of recharge. And I totally feel like I'm an introvert. And so understanding that that's okay. You can be introverted and still be a social, funny person. Like, it's not one or the other. And you have to like, it's okay to protect your energy a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And it's okay to shift who you are for different groups, shift who you are in different situations. It's all just coping mechanisms, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was saying to my housemate, well, you know, now I have Jinx to put all of that energy to. And it's kind of like, that's my designated time to be extroverted and do anything I can to steal the focus. But also, I'm just tired. That's exhausting to keep that up for a lifetime.
It's so exhausting. It is. And I think it's important to I mean, our jobs are so social. They're just very inherently very social. Like, you're on set, or you're doing a show, a play, or you're just around a bunch of people for very long hours. And so it's just an inherently very social job. But to be able to carve out a space where you can retreat. Like, I had the same experience with this pandemic, where I was like, oh, we're not leaving our house. Oh my God. Great.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think mine definitely came out of some desperation. I think it was very much a fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if anyone who knew me back then knew the amount of anxieties and insecurities I was riddled with.
Yes.
And that this seemingly boisterous person was really just, you know, scared of being found out for being an introverted weirdo.
Yeah.
But it was just so funny with my housemate today, who's known me since I was like 16, just being like, wait a second, didn't you used to be outgoing? And I'm like, I'm still outgoing. And they're like, I don't know. The pandemic is kind of shifting, and you are still in full blown hermit mode.
Yeah,
and I'm
like,
listen, this is actually my natural state. I was just hiding it for about 27 years.
Yes. Yes. I really relate to that. And that idea of, like, I think also when you are a performer, and I'd be curious if a lot of performers or artistic people feel this way, where you're like, you're so tuned in to your environment and the needs, I guess is the right word, but the sort of vibe of something, you're so like aware of it that you match it, or you try to, you know, to speak to your point of like shifting your energy and the how you behave in different groups with different people. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot.
I think I'm probably most introverted around my family. Because
really?
My family is where I learned the persona of my extroverted self.
Interesting.
I was raised by many women and, you know, it was like my mom, my aunt, and my grandma growing up, and then also my uncle, occasionally my grandfather, but it was mostly these really large feminine personalities.
Yeah.
And when they get together, it's like, people know me for my cackle. They have no idea the environment I was raised in. Like the sound of the laughter reverberating off the walls and ceilings. You know?
Oh, that
like
sounds wonderful.
The paint on the walls.
Yeah.
But to shift our conversation
bit,
I want
sure.
I could just talk about my idiosyncrasies for hours. I want to talk about. With so many different roles under your belt and so many appearances and so many different shows, I have to imagine there were also lots of moments of not getting the role, getting a role that then fell through or something got pulled.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been watching the show The Other Two, but it's like, it's amazing.
I love that show. It is so good. Yes.
It's amazing how much I can relate to it, even though it's so different from my own experience. But
yeah,
I did in my notes here, I have something about you having worked on a show with Carol Burnett.
Yes.
That ended up not happening.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, I
Carol
can.
Carol Burnett is one of my goddesses I worship. She, you know, she's
same.
She's someone I pay tribute to for as the comedy gods.
Same.
I'd love to hear about working with her.
Oh, my God. I can't. I'm thrilled to tell you that she, everything that you dream of her being, she is. Mm-hmm. And more. Like, That show, it was a pilot for ABC called Household Name, and the premise of it, it was so funny. The script was so funny. It was the premise of it was that she was like a movie star along the lines of a Norma Desmond type who ran into some financial trouble and needed to sell her house. But there is a thing that happens sometimes in real estate with older people when they're looking to downsize or are, you know, no longer need a giant house that they had once raised a family in. They will put a caveat into when they put their house up for sale. They'll say, you know, yes, you could buy the house for this much. However, you have to let me live in this house until I die. And this is a real thing that happens. And so that was the premise of this, was that she was like, okay, well, I'll get to still live in my house and I'll, you know, I'll have to share it with this family, but I'll get to stay here. And so you sort of become, I was a member of this family that was moving in and we became roommates with her. And she was my husband was a huge fan of hers and it was like his idea to do all this. And I was the more like, I don't know this. Who is this? And you know, but it was a multicam, so that is as close to like a getting to do like a live theater with film and TV as you can get. And we had all these rehearsals, and Carol, the physical comedy. I mean, of course, we all know it and have loved it. Of hers for decades, but to get to see it in person and to get to see it with this woman who I believe she was like over 80 when we shot this pilot. Oh. And she was extraordinary. Yeah. And she, the level of professionalism and creativity and energy, she was so committed. It was like, it was just, it felt like being in the sun, being in her presence, she and watching her do what she does, which she is such a genius at. Yeah, I was devastated that that didn't end up going, because I really thought that Carol's return to television is such a huge, would have been, and she did, you know, has returned in all these other ways, but with this show, I was like, oh, this is, we got to make this. This is so great. Yeah. But yeah, it just didn't work out. But
well, I have to say, I mean, Carol is, Carol Burnett seems like, you know, one of the living embodiments of what it meant to be a television entertainer in kind of like the golden era of network TV, when every star of every show had to be able to sing and to dance and be able to, like, you know, in the middle of their sitcom, do a big musical number.
Yes, right.
And
she was all of those things.
Yeah. So I'm personally jealous, but also very happy for you that you worked with Carol. Have you have you developed any tricks for when something like that happens, when you're excited for a project and for whatever reason it doesn't pan out? What's your go-to, like, way of healing from those moments?
None. There, I have no tools in place. It's crushing every time. It's a heartbreak, and it's like that moment, that First Wives Club moment all over again, where I'm like, well, that's it. You know, like it always hurts. It never doesn't hurt. But I think the thing that has changed over the years that I guess is something that there's a resilience that builds, I guess, where you just kind of, you've been in that place. I mean, I 8 years auditioned for things, never got anything, not a single thing for more than eight years. And I hear no much more often than I've ever hear a yes or a maybe or a we'll see. So I think what happened with me was there comes a sort of, you just accept that, okay, I'm here again. I've been here before. I will be here again. It's not permanent. I will lift out of this. I don't know how yet, but something will come along. This didn't work out for whatever reason, but I've been here before. I'll be here again, and it's okay. And so I think there's just an acceptance of, like, this, my heart is just going to break.
Yeah. Oh, Mary, I wish I could reach through the Zoom call and cradle your head.
Yeah, but you know, it never stops being tough, because you are the product. Like, that's the thing, is you're not you. It's like yourself that you're putting out there, and so I don't know how you don't get heartbroken.
Yeah, I think one of my mantras I've told myself, you know, because I've gone for quite a few roles myself, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
As I've been really, you know, like, working at making that transition from, you know, reality TV based drag queen to, hey, look at me, I can act too.
Yes, right.
And I'll never leave drag. Like, drag's my passion, but I definitely, you know, want to get a little bit more of a footing in the acting world at large.
Totally.
You know, just open up what I can do. lots of rejection comes from it, especially, I think, when there's like a cattle call for, we need a drag queen to play this role. It could be any drag queen. Give me a drag queen.
Yeah, right.
I've begun to just tell myself, this was just a bad day at work. And everyone's got to have bad days at work. Yeah. But it does feel, it feels more intense because it feels like my bad day at work involves me being told I'm not good enough. But then if I look at like when I've had like a bad day at work at like a, at that health food cafe I worked at, I took it personally then too, yeah. You know, when they told me I made a sandwich wrong.
I took it personally when a squire told me that the picture I was trying to sell him wasn't framed properly. I get it. Yeah, you just give a lot of yourself to everything you do, and especially as a performer, like our whole job is to wear our heart on our sleeve and be affected and like, you know.
Now, I think rejection is part of, is a hazard of the trade. It's that moment in the movie Drop Dead Gorgeous when Denise Richards is polishing her guns and she just goes, well, hunting's dangerous.
Exactly.
Someone's been killed and she says, well,
hunting's dangerous. And that's it. Yeah. That's it.
It's just always a pleasure every time I'm watching a show or revisiting a show. And next thing I know, Mary Holland's on my screen. And then I text you in a frantic buzz.
Thank you, James.
Thank you so much for being my guest. Before I let you go, I have some my compulsory questions that ask every guest. You may answer them however you feel. Question the first. Who is your celebrity crush today? Ugh.
Today, yesterday, always, Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, yeah? What is it about Tommy Lee that pulls you in?
I love his face. I think he has the most incredible face. He's so charming. He's such an amazing actor. But he has a real gravitas to him that I am so drawn to. And I have been since I was 12 or something. That's when I first like spotted him in The Fugitive and was like, ah.
I'm going to have to steal that face for future.
Who is that? And it, to this day, I it's my crush. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I'll just go with a standby.
Okay.
And say, so he's actually a friend of mine, but I'm very upfront with him that I've always had a crush on him because of his character on Modern Family. But it's Reed Ewing who plays I've been binge watching Modern Family. I have to tell you, I found out that people with anxiety have a tendency to rewatch shows because they already know what's coming. So they find it calming to watch something where they already know how it ends.
And yes. Already yeah, know all I the get twists that. Yeah.
And turns. So what I should have done is looked at that study and looked at that like statistic and said, oh, that's something about me I could probably work on. But instead I used it as, no one can tell me now that I'm weird for doing this. I don't care if it's the fifth time I'm watching The Office.
Oh my God.
This article says I have to because of anxiety.
This is how I'm self-caring right now. Yes, totally. Okay, so that's...
So I'm always going...
Reviewing
a stoner slacker boyfriend. But, you know, now that I'm saying it, I'm like, the actor who plays Lance on the other two is so hot. I'm going to look him up right now. The other two cast. His name is Josh Segarra. He's super hot, too.
Super hot.
And I just love the kind of, like, optimistic... I love the optimistic dum-dum yeah. in the show. That's always my, that's
God,
my favorite
God, me too. That's it. God, yeah. Love them.
My second question for you is, are you spiritual?
Yum. Yum.
Yum. Heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any daily rituals that you perform for
yourself? Oh, gosh, no. No, but I do. I do really. I very much feel plugged into a magic. I do feel there's a magic element to this plane somehow. I have crystals. I get tarot readings. I have done rituals in the past where I've like written down intentions and then burned them at the full moon.
Who hasn't?
I've gotten my astrological charts done. I do feel there's a magic somewhere, but
how else do you explain serendipity and deja vu? Deja vu to me feels like one of the most like persistent moments of magic in our life. And it's that moment of like, you feel like, okay, I've been here before. I've done this before.
Yes.
I've seen this image before, this vignette before. And then your brain starts to try to work out like, did it happen before? Did I dream it? Is this a premonition coming true? Is there a glitch in the matrix? Just the way it gets my brain thinking when I have deja vu to me is a little moment of magic in the day, but a scary one. It's kind of a scary
moment. Oh, yeah, it's a scary.
Because there's so much unknown.
Oh, yeah, and not a clear answer to that. But I agree. Like that moment of I've been here before. I also feel like intuition is such proof of magic. Mm-hmm. Like you getting a bad feeling about something, that's magic. Don't you think?
Yeah. Absolutely. Because there's got to be, it's either that there was something in the air or there's something about you or it was just being open to trusting your instincts. It's both magic and then also, I think, you know, a visceral element that ties us to the fact that we live on a living, breathing rock and we are animals.
Totally. Yes. It's both like us at our most primal, but then also us at our most elevated where we're like, we're picking up on energy. There's nothing physical maybe that's evidence that we're in danger, but it is like a simultaneous, like primal and spiritual thing.
Yeah. Because then you like look at it later, you look at it in retrospect and you're like, oh, probably something triggered this part of my brain, which created this hormone, which sent this response to this part of my body. And so in the moment, it feels like, you know, like magic intuition. And then there's also probably a science to it. You know? And both things can be true.
Yes, I love that. Both things can be true.
One thing feeds the other. Yeah. It's been my go-to catchphrase lately is two things can be true.
And sometimes more.
When my housemates are like, did you just fall asleep on the couch or were you intentionally not doing the dishes? You know what? Two things can be true. And my final question for you is, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Jolene by Dolly Parton.
Okay.
I love it.
That's a good one.
I love it.
That's a real good one.
I love it. I love the scene of it. I love the idea. Mm-hmm. I sort of visualize whenever I'm doing it, I'm like, okay, I've decided to meet this woman at a bar, this like incredibly striking, stunning woman, and I'm begging her not to, because she could have my man, and I'm begging her
in an instant.
And the like, it's just so moving to me, this idea of like, look, I just want to have a conversation with you. Please don't take him. Please. It's so heartbreaking. And I love playing the emotion of it.
I hope to witness this three-act play of you doing Jolene at karaoke someday. That's my next goal for
okay.
us. Okay.
Well, gosh, I'll get right on it. Make it happen.
Before I let you go and get back to your busy actressing schedule, do you have anything to promote? Do you have anything to promote or anything you want our listeners to
well,
know about?
Well, yeah, as the holiday season approaches, please watch Happiest Season. I can't believe we're already almost in Halloween time. And before you know it, Thanksgiving.
Before you know it,
Christmas. Hanukkah.
Yeah.
It's all coming. It's around the corner.
It's so great that, I think we have more queer representation during the holidays now than ever before. And, you know, we have movies waiting for us on Hulu for us to watch.
Yes.
And if you need something as like a placeholder between them, I highly recommend the Kacey Musgraves Christmas special. In the fact that it is a beautifully produced program that also is completely baffling.
Those are the best kinds.
And that's no shade to anyone who worked on the project. It is kind of magic. If there's not an element of just head scratching befuddlement as part of your Christmas special,
No. That's a requirement. You need to have that part in there. I mean, I remember was it Bill Murray? He did a Christmas special, and it was weird. I wonder if I'm misremembering who did that.
I feel like it's kind of like a rite of passage for many performers to do a Christmas special, and for it's always that wonderful mix of like this is scripted, but we're going to make it seem like you're just at home with us, and we're like
it's
this
so
all the time.
Funny, yes. on that note, please watch. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're obviously a fan of Jinx, but you gotta watch Jinx and Ben Nolikrim's special.
They're great companions.
They really
pieces.
Are.
You get queer holidays in reality and queer holidays in a drag queen fever dream.
The best. The best.
So we got your winter covered. You're just going to watch these two movies back and forth on a loop
forever.
And
that's how you're going to cope with your anxiety. Just like us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much,
thank
Mary
you,
Holland.
Jinx.
And thank you all so much for listening to Hi Jinx here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday. So make sure to search for Hi Jinx on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. Where can they follow
you,
Mary?
They can follow me at Mary Hollandaise on Instagram and on Twitter. And I'm not on TikTok.
I have to say I love the handle
Do
Mary
you?
Hollandaise because it. I don't even eat eggs, but every time you pop up in my feed, I want a Benedict
you
of
want
some
brunch.
Sort. An eggless
and that's
Benedict.
That's my goal. That's my brand is brunch. And so the more I can get that energy out there, I'm into it.
Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hi Jinx!
Forever!
To listen to Hi Jinx ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social and rate and review Hi Jinx 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi Jinx is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.